JC Corcoran Podcast.
See you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
14th of June, 2021. Welcome to the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. Nolan Arenado putting on a defensive miracle show last night for the national audience on ESPN, but the Cardinals are in trouble. Cardinals are in big trouble. We got all these injuries. We don't have enough starting pitching. Bullpen's trouble. Carlos Martinez continues to be a head case, a very talented guy, but head case nonetheless. And don't get me wrong, I think Major League Baseball comes out a little too dry for the potential audience, the sports audience in the year 2021. And I don't mind seeing, you know, displays of emotion and stuff like that. But Carlos Martinez is stomping around out there like a two-year-old who wants a juice box now. Wrigley Field looked beautiful. I'll be there in a month for the Cubs-Cardinal weekend coming up in July. And we'll see some of you there, I am sure. I want to get a plug in for tomorrow's podcast. You know, I guess there's something about St. Louis being, I don't know what you'd call it, the home of tribute bands, but it sure seems like we have a lot of them. Obviously, El Monstero comes to mind, but there's a new one. And if you're unfamiliar with this one, oh man, it's called Mr. Blue Sky, a tribute to the Electric Light Orchestra. Now, they've only played about a half a dozen gigs, but we saw, I think it was their second gig at Del Mar Hall about 2 years ago. And it was a little bumpy, but at the same time, really, really good. And I remember, you know, talking to everybody around, and we were watching this going, this is only their second gig. These guys are going to be really good in about 6 months. So they played a couple of more gigs, and they're going to play this drive-in thing. As a matter of fact, the website to get tickets for the show coming up on July 2nd, which is a Friday night at the Powerplex Drive-In. And then they have food trucks and drink tents that will turn into drunk tents, I'm sure. But again, driveinstl.com, and you see this ELO tribute show. And tomorrow morning on the podcast, the orchestrator of the entire thing, Jeff Faulkner, is going to be on with us, and we'll talk about all of that. All right, what's next? I guess I'll do this one because people are, you know, really just sort of waking up in a lot of cases. You ever have a song stuck in your head and then you wake up the next day and it's still in your head? A new study found it's fairly common and it might be affecting your sleep. Scientists at Baylor played catchy songs for people before bed and then scanned their brains while they slept. The songs they used were Shake It Off by Taylor Swift, Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen, and Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. And they found that when you go to bed with a song in your head, your brain keeps getting triggered by it even while you sleep. So the quality of your sleep suffers. If you're someone who gets songs stuck in your head a lot, they say you might not want to listen to music late at night anymore, or at least not right before bed. Not many people are great at world geography, but you'd think they'd know what the hell was going on in their own country and the major landmarks. A new survey asked people where different landmarks are, like the Grand Canyon. Only 38% of people knew what state it's in. 19% thought it was in Colorado, which was the most common wrong answer. Correct answer, of course, is Arizona. And here's one more thing. Only 32% of people knew where Niagara Falls is. Even though New York and Canada were both acceptable answers, 22% of people, now keep this in mind, this is Americans, 22% of Americans thought that Niagara Falls was in Iceland. I feel like I'm jaywalking here with Leno.
You think it's in Iceland?
Another new survey says Americans don't want to ease into traveling. Now that the pandemic is easing back, they want to make a big splash. 59% of people say they plan to jump back into travel with a bucket list vacation they wouldn't have considered before the pandemic. Some of the specific landmarks people are searching for include the Grand Canyon, although a lot of people apparently will go to Colorado to see it, the Eiffel Tower, Niagara Falls, call Trailways and book a trip to Iceland, the Statue of Liberty, the Colosseum in Rome, and the Vegas Strip. In general, Rome was number one on people's wish lists for international travel, followed by Paris, London, Venice, Italy, and Sydney, Australia. Honolulu, the number one destination in the United States, followed by New York, Las Vegas, L.A., and Miami. And there's these kinky websites popping up. You got this, what is it, OnlyFans? I have a friend who does that. I'm still not 100% sure how it works. But these, you know, websites that specialize in just, you know, weird stuff. Furries have their own websites and stuff like that. And there's another one. Which one was this? It doesn't say which one it is. All right. Anyhow, a woman in Michigan got a folding chair stuck around her waist last week, and firefighters had to use the jaws of life to get her out. It turns out she does fetish videos where she gets herself stuck in different ways, and people pay $2 a minute to watch her get unstuck. I have one of the videos here. I've not had an opportunity to watch it. But as soon as the podcast says bye-bye today, I got a little internet watching to do. This topic might get a little weird. And I think we talked about this on the old radio show once or twice. I was asking people yesterday if they remember the old cartoon series Quick Draw McGraw. Now, it turns out if you're under the age of 50, you may not have any recollection of this, but it was a staple of Saturday morning TV shows, and then it ran on, you know, various cartoon channels and stuff like that for years. I don't think it's been on for a long time because kids are just way, way too sophisticated right now when it comes to entertainment. you know, Billy Crystal and John Goodman are getting ready to do another Monsters, Inc. movie. And the animation of these things is just, it's startling. I mean, as you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And, you know, you can't take a kid who is used to animation and special effects and just the sophistication of entertainment that kids have right now and then sit them down and go, okay, now watch this thing from the 1960s, because they'll look at you like, what do we want? What is this? It just looks so primitive. You know, but for years, for decades, people have been wondering if Walt Disney was on something a couple of times when he conceived of some of the stuff that you've seen in movies like Fantasia and stuff like that. And I, for a long time, have suggested that in the 1960s, the makers of the cartoon series Quick Draw McGraw were on something, and were on something very, very powerful and something very, very good that I would like to for myself. So just think about this for a minute. If you're unfamiliar with Quick Draw McGraw, he was a horse. He was a horse, but he did a lot of walking on two legs, you know, where he's like standing almost like a person. So you, that's number one. And then he had a little sidekick, because you have to. His sidekick's name was Babalu. As I recall, it was like a little pig or a baby bull or something like that. But Quick Draw McGraw, and this is where it gets really weird, if you'll remember this, had an alter ego. So first of all, you got a talking horse who walks on two legs. That's problem number one in terms of credibility. The suspending of disbelief becomes very, very important when it comes to movies and TV shows and cartoons and stuff like that. So you got a talking horse who walks on two legs who has an alter ego. The alter ego's name was El Kabong. And every once in a while, Quick Draw McGraw would just descend into this alter ego named El Kabong. And El Kabong would wear a little, like a little Zorro mask. And then he had a big Spanish guitar. And for some reason, would come swooping in on enemies on a vine, like Tarzan. And of course, the first thing I'm thinking of is, all right, not that the whole thing isn't absolutely ridiculous, but now you got a talking horse with an alter ego walking on two legs, wearing a Zorro mask, and carrying a giant Spanish guitar, swooping in on enemies on a vine. I'm like, hot way. All right, hold on. First of all, how the hell does he hold on to a vine? He's a horse. He has hooves. That's problem number one. Problem number two, he's a horse. He has hooves. How would you play the guitar? I'm sorry. These are the things that keep me awake at night. And then he would end up in some sort of confrontation with the bad guy or the bad animal, whatever it was. And he would take the big Spanish guitar and hit him over the head. Kabong. Now, whether you are familiar with that cartoon series or not, you must agree with me. You must. That there were some very, very powerful and effective drugs involved in the production of that show. You might have seen this over the weekend. A 56-year-old lobster diver in Massachusetts named Michael Packard claims a humpback whale tried to eat him last week. But did it really happen like the guy says? He was scuba diving 45 feet down when everything went dark and he realized that he was in the whale's mouth. But then about 30 seconds later, it brought him up to the surface and spit him out. Or at least that's what he says happened, and a friend backed up the story. But at least one doctor says, I'm not so sure about this. This guy showed up at an emergency room in Cape Cod, and one of the doctors says that he came up from 45 feet. If he had come up that fast from 45 feet, he would have had the bends, meaning his body wouldn't have had time to deal with the pressure change. But the medical report only mentioned some light bruising and nothing serious. You're going to tell a fish story. Tell a fish story. 44-year-old woman in Pennsylvania faces charges after she tried to hire a hitman to kill her husband for $4,000, and she asked for a payment plan of $100 a week for 40 weeks. This story confirms that things are really rough out there. Last Friday, an unruly passenger forced a Delta Airlines flight to be diverted. On Saturday, Delta said the person was an off-duty flight attendant. Donald Trump turned 75 today, although he's contesting that number. Steffi Graf, 52. How do you ever go out and perform after somebody runs out on the court and stabs you in the middle of a tennis match? She's 52 today. Yasmine Bleeth, who I have identified as the finest-looking female human being I've ever had the opportunity to interview from Baywatch 53 today, but don't look her up now. You'll be very, very disappointed. Boy George, 60, and the first Hard Rock Cafe opened in London on this date in 1971. Speaking of grand openings, we have something for you here because it's anniversary of a big one with regard to St. Louis today, which, by the way, what is it they're saying, 97? If you're listening to this in the morning, they're saying 97 degrees, which I believe would be a record for St. Louis. About a month ago, I had just watched the movie Network for the first time in probably 10 years, and geez, was Ned Beatty great in that movie. You know, all people want to do is make the jokes about the Deliverance movie, and I know he carried that around. We had him on the air in Los Angeles once, and you just don't bring that up because the poor guy, you know, has been a great actor for a long time. And all people want to do is squeal like a pig, squeal like a pig. He was in the movie Nashville, Toy Story 3. He died natural causes over the weekend, 83. Pretty damn good actor. But my God, was he amazing in the movie Network. He was in All the President's Men, Silver Streak, The Toy, the first two Superman movies. He was Rudy's dad in Rudy. He played Dan Conner's dad in the original Roseanne. And even more embarrassing than the scene in Deliverance, if a TV game show called Ultimate Slip and Slide had a kryptonite, it would probably be, well, let's start the story from the beginning. There is a show called Ultimate Slip and Slide that's going to debut on NBC in August, and the production had to shut down indefinitely because of explosive diarrhea. That's right. There was an outbreak of something called Giardia. Giardia, a parasite that causes nasty gastrointestinal issues. A source says that up to 40 crew members fell violently ill. There was a lot of running to porta potties, and some people even collapsed. It doesn't sound like any pools or slides were soiled. The show only has about a week's worth of taping to do, and they're trying to figure out how to do it, but I'm just guessing there's a lot of bleach involved. Ultimate Slip and Slide, hosted by comedians Bobby Moynihan from Saturday Night Live and Ron Funches. They, by the way, did not get sick. And we have the return of live comedy tonight. Stephen Colbert with guests Jon Stewart and Dana Carvey will be live with a complete studio audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York tonight. And I cannot wait. And now this.
People will always have sort of a warm place in their hearts for Steve Winwood because you were the very first act to open up our big outdoor concert venue, the Riverport Amphitheater, back about 15 years ago. Robert Cray was the opening act. Do you have any recollection of that night here in St. Louis?
Oh, I do, yes. Yes, that's right. It was a big amphitheater. What's the name of the amphitheater again?
Well, at the time, it was called the Riverport Amphitheater. It's been renamed since that time.
It's been renamed already.
Yeah. Yes. But did that produce any sort of oddity for you? I mean, given the fact that they're expecting you to walk out on stage in a place that had never, ever been performed in before, had never been tested, you don't know if the sound's going to work, if the light's going to work, and all that sort of stuff. What do you remember about that night?
Well, I just hope that, you know, the people have done their homework. I'm sure there's very many able, clever people had worked on the sound and the audio side.
Yep. Sorry to do this to you because it's going to make you feel real old, but Riverport Amphitheater opened on this day, June 14th, 1991, 30 years ago tonight. It's hard to imagine that this situation existed, but St. Louis was behind the eight ball there for a lot of years because we were one of the few major cities across the country that did not have one of these big outdoor venues, you know, with a pavilion and then a lawn and the whole thing. You know, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, for heaven's sakes. All of these places. Oh, Red Rocks in Colorado. And the founders of Contemporary Productions, Steve Shankman and Irv Zuckerman, both very good friends of mine, said, we're going to build it. They booked the Robert Cray Band to open for Steve Winwood. And I said, well, let's do this the right way. So I went up in the helicopter for Channel 5 with Channel 5, piloted by one Mr. Alan Barklage. And then we had all of the boss jocks down on the ground level doing their individual reports. And here's how it sounded exactly 30 years ago tonight. It's the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater now, but back then, it was the grand opening of the Riverport Amphitheater.
Down by the river, J.C. Corcoran, high above the Riverport Amphitheater on opening night. We're going to be here for the 93 minutes to Riverport. Alan Barklage, the greatest American hero, at the controls, along with Libby Cochin, our executive morning show producer, and Lori Light, who is going to be providing Channel 5 news in just a few minutes with a live shot of the traffic situation here.
I'm Executive Vice President Irv Zuckerman, and we're co-owners. Steve and I are co-owners and always have been of Contemporary Productions. Well, obviously, whenever you're putting something together that takes this long, the last minute seems like about a year, but all day today, it's just been going so nicely that I've just been kind of waiting for 8 o'clock. We're ready to play some music, we're ready to party, we're ready to kick Riverport off. And actually, at this point, I'm not only serene, I'm dizzy because I'm following JC in the helicopter and I'm starting to fall over.
Guys, I was just curious as to whether or not you're expecting a huge walk-up tonight.
Well, it's hard to tell, JC, but we've had a good walk-up all day long. We've sold several hundred tickets today, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of people coming out tonight to buy tickets, and we encourage them to come out. We got plenty of room on the lawn tonight. Tickets are available at the box office. We don't see any major traffic problem at this time, and we encourage people to come on out.
Well, we just, my job is mainly when they come in, make sure our guys are doing what they're supposed to do, and they've got Very Lights in today. It was really special. I mean, those are really nice lights.
Well, what are Very Lights for everybody that doesn't know?
Well, it's the company out of Texas, and they're the lights you see that do anything you want them to do, any color, just about any color. Patterns, they move. I mean, it's amazing what they do. Yeah, they're like the neatest thing ever to come into lighting.
In a little while, we're going to check in with Mark Close down on the ground, who's going to kind of take a look at some of the similar venues around the Midwest. There are many of these outdoor venues spread all over the country. We're going to kind of compare those to what we have out here at Riverport. And also, Mark is going to take a fond look back at the old days of the Mississippi River Festival. Don't forget now, this is a big weekend, not just tonight with Steve Winwood and the Robert Cray Band featuring the Memphis Horns, but tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, Mannheim Steamroller Chip Davis, who was a guest on the Breakfast Club not too long ago, and his 50-piece orchestra, the Fresh Air Concert in the Fresh Air tomorrow night at Riverport, starting at 8 o'clock. As far as Steve Winwood is concerned tonight, we expect him to start with I'm a Man. Later on, you'll hear songs like While You See a Chance, The Low Spark of High-Heeled Boys, and won't that be exciting to hear a live version of that? Also, Medicated Goo, Feeling All Right, Roll With It, Higher Love, and Gimme Some Lovin', all of those on the playlist for Steve Winwood tonight out here at Riverport. We'll check in live.
They've opened the gates just
there
now.
There they go. 6:41 on Friday, June 14th, out here at the Riverport Amphitheater. They open the gates, and in they go.
We're talking to the very first people through the gates of the Riverport Amphitheater, and this is Chris and Wendy Black. Chris, where are you from? What do you do?
From St. Charles. We own Café Beignet.
We just wanted to get the best seat on the lawn.
That's wow. True. And now I got you over here, and it's going to...
I can't believe it.
And now it's going to fill up, and you're going to get the worst seat.
When you come to the pavilion here at Riverport, you may see some of those private boxes down close to the stage. Those will be served by waitresses, similar to the way the private boxes work at the arena and also Busch Stadium. However, Steve Shankman from Contemporary Productions told me yesterday that with about 48 hours notice, they can have any kind of food you want ready for you and your guests in these boxes. See if you can stump them, but you got to get your hands on one of the boxes first. Some of the inhabitants of those private boxes include Channel 5 and Channel 30, Anheuser-Busch, Pepsi, a law firm or two.
We welcome to the Breakfast Club Sunil Sinha, who is production manager out of Riverport. Welcome.
Thank you. Wonderful night. Terrific night.
You would think that this absolutely would be the state-of-the-art place.
It is. What they've done is they've corrected everything that was a mistake or something that was not fully done in all the other facilities. And with the design architect, who's been involved, I think, 5 or 7 of these, they corrected all these things that they wanted to. And this is incredible. Wonderful.
Now, what about the artist's reaction to some of this? Winwood, I talked to his manager a little while ago. He was flying a kite. And
They loved it. They came in here and they said, "This is great. This is incredible. For production, it's wonderful. Easy."
J.C. Corcoran, sending it downstairs to Mark Close.
Thanks, J.C. Appreciate it. Here with the opening of the Riverport, a lot of comparison going on with some of the other amphitheaters throughout the country. In mine, Pine Knob up in Detroit, Michigan, holds about 14,000 people. Outside of Chicago's Poplar Creek at 22.5. And then outside of Cleveland, Ohio, is the Blossom Music Center at about 18,000 people. But I guess if you're going to do a comparison, everybody in the St. Louis area always goes back kind of to the granddaddy of them all, and that would have to be the Mississippi River Festival, and some great memories from those days. And that was kind of B.C. That was before Corcoran, if you can imagine that. The first concert happened way back in June 20th, 1969, and that was the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. The first kind of rock or folk show happened with Buffy St. Marie, June 23rd. Again, that was 1969, and whatever it went through on trivia a little bit earlier today, the reason that MRF came about was a summer home for the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, and for the first summer, they played 18 performances there, and about 12 of the contemporary acts came about afterwards. So again, the start was June 20th, 1969, with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. Buffy St. Marie was the first pop/folk performer on June 23rd from 1969. The last performance happened on August 23rd of 1980, and that was ZZ Top. I got a lot of this information from the director of MRF, the Mississippi River Festival, a gentleman by the name of Lyle Ward from 1970 through 79. You'll probably remember back, we were talking about this this week on trivia. The largest attendance ever at MRF was for The Who, 1971. 33,000 people showed up for that show. Wishbone Ash was the opening act. There were shows interrupted due to the weather. In fact, in 1970, some tornado winds blew in, snapped some poles on the tent. Nobody was hurt. Waited a few minutes, and the show went on. To give you an idea of the times and going back to 1969, ticket prices at the Mississippi River Festival, and you're going to love this, the reserve seats under the tent were $6.50, and the lawn seats were $2. Of course, back then you could get gas at 19 cents a gallon, too. Some of the acts that performed throughout the years at the Mississippi River Festival: Iron Butterfly, Janis Joplin, Arlo Guthrie, Richie Havens, The Grateful Dead, Chicago, The Guess Who, Ike and Tina Turner, Chuck Berry, David Cassidy, one of my favorites, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And the year that Harry Chapin came in late, he missed his flight out of New York, took a private jet in, went to the airport, called up a guy by the name of Alan Barklage, who flew him in to the Mississippi River Festival. I'm sure Alan remembers that. And did you stay for the show, Alan, or did you just, you flew back?
I just blew back.
Okay, good for you.
Didn't stay for the show. Are you kidding? It was so hard to find a place to land out there. You know, they set it up. They said, okay, they'll have some players where they want me to land. Well, that got out to the audience, and everybody out there had some kind of a fire burning. I had no idea where to land this guy.
They were barbecuing, Alan. They were all having their cue pits going, and it got pretty intense. But that was some of the great shows that went about in there. And again, it kind of came to an end in 1980. But SIU folks ran it from 69 through 77 with some incredible shows and some great memories over the Mississippi River Festival at SIU. And we've got opening night here at Riverport. I'm sure many great memories to come in the very near future. It's Mark Close reporting live from Riverport.
A couple of facts and figures to throw at you. Riverport is a $15 million concert facility on approximately 500 acres of land here in Maryland Heights. The stage and pavilion area cover about 50,000 square feet of open area, unobstructed by any columns. There is nothing to get in your way. The stage and the pavilion structure were made of recycled steel here in 1991. That's of interest to a lot of people. And the roof structure is designed to support about 75,000 pounds of lighting, sound equipment, etc. The general contractor, Sphere Drip Building Corporation, and Ben Hur Construction both did a great job. Thanks to Kevin Bloom with the Nucor Building Systems for the stats. There are about 7,000 pavilion seats. Those were sold a long time ago. Another 13,000 lawn seats are filling up as we speak. Opening night at Riverport, Robert Cray and Steve Winwood, of course, Mannheim Steamroller with their 50-piece orchestra out here at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. That about does it from the helicopter. We will see you on the ground. Again, congratulations to Irv Zuckerman and Steve Shankman.
God, people were worried about everything. They were worried about traffic. They were worried about, well, for good reason, they should have been worried about traffic. They were worried about flooding because you're right next to the river right there. Thus the name. Turned out the biggest threat to the place was something they never could have imagined, and that was the band and the audience to see the band, Guns N' Roses, where they practically wrecked the... Well, they did wreck it to a large extent, but they couldn't wreck it badly enough to ruin it for good. That was fun hearing Alan Barklage and Mark Close. And there you go. Another J.C. Corcoran podcast is in the can. Please let everybody know that we are here. A lot of people who used to listen to the old show, the old radio shows every day, still don't know we're here. So that would be your job. If you can, spread the word a little bit and let people know. All they got to do is type in jcontheline.com and you get a free podcast, 30 minutes every single morning. We post at 7 a.m. Central Time. All right. Talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your day. Stay cool. Oh, meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.